All right. Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Bud Hicks. I'm chairman of the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee, and I am calling this meeting to order this morning. The date is Wednesday, November 17, 2021. It is 8:31 a.m. The first item on the agenda is the roll call, and Mara, would you please call roll to determine quorum?
Mrs. Sagowski.
This is Mark Voloshin. I'm here as a proxy.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark. Ms. Faustinos?
Here.
Mr. Friedrich?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novosel? Ms. Williamson?
Good morning, here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. I'll now review our meeting rules for the day. To observe and participate.
Hi, this is Barbara Sagowski. I'm here.
Hello, Barbara. Our meeting rules. To observe and participate in the meeting, please go to www.trpa.gov. Select November 17, 2021 Governing Board Meeting on the calendar and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. In order to participate in this Forest Health and Wildfire Committee meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function on the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee. If you have contacted the TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter the PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using the GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you are joining via the call-in number posted on our website, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee or this committee, you may need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone and dial your unique PIN number. To committee members, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function if you are online, or speak up if you are calling in. Please set your chat box now to message panelists to the message panelists and organizers to ensure that I see your message. Please, remote board members may only use the chat box to indicate a desire to speak. This function must not be used to have sidebar conversations. Please remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. Finally, I would like to have all committee members turn on their cameras as we now have sufficient capacity on our platforms to accommodate everybody. The next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Maria, are there any changes to be made to the agenda?
No changes, Mr. Chair.
All right. With no changes, then we'll deem the agenda approved and proceed. This brings us to agenda item number 2. Discussion and possible recommendation of Forest Health Code language regarding mechanical ground-based equipment on 30 to 50% slopes, Chapter 61, Vegetation and Forest Health, Section 61.16B through 61.16D. Information can be found at page 581 of your packet. At this point, I'd like to introduce our TRPA staff member, Dr. Kat McIntyre, who has been working on this project. Kat?
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. As mentioned, my name is Kat McIntyre. I'm the Forest Health Program Manager, and I am going to be presenting on the proposed Forest Health Code Amendments and language regarding ground-based mechanical equipment on slopes 30 to 50% within the Lake Tahoe Basin. Next slide, please. So this is the agenda for this presentation. I'm going to cover the history, background, and ultimate need for these proposed changes. We'll dig into the code amendments and see what they look like, Then I'll open it up for discussion and questions, and ideally we will end with a motion for recommendation for these amendments to go to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee and subsequently the Governing Board. Next slide. So a bit of history and background for, especially for the new committee members. The Angora Fire happened in 2007, and this fire burned in South Lake Tahoe area about 3,100 acres and 250 structures. And from this fire emerged the Bi-State Commission. So the two governors came together and brought together a commission to produce the Emergency California-Nevada Tahoe Basin Fire Commission Report. And so this, Bud was part of this group, and this group produced recommendations on policy, implementation, regarding the vulnerability to fire of the basin, and then also forest resilience. Next slide, please. One of the biggest recommendations to come out of this was recommendation 17 regarding simplifying regulations. And if you look at the bottom piece, it essentially says the commission recommends the TRPA, the Lahontan Water Quality Control Board, the Forest Service, and all other affected agencies should amend their plans and ordinances to allow equipment use on slopes greater than 30% based on current and future technology. So I would like to point out there are a variety of recommendations that came out of this report, and we have made great strides in meeting a lot of those recommendations. But recommendation 17 is one of the largest ones that's still outstanding. And you might remember in the September Governing Board meeting on Caldor Fire, Chris Anthony from CAL FIRE mentioned that this recommendation is still one of the biggest ones that we need in order to really increase basin scale, decrease fire risk, and increase forest resilience within the basin. Next slide, please. So this slide is just showing some pictures from the Angora fire and ultimately treatment effectiveness. So what we see on the left side is a treated area, and what we see on the right side is untreated. And the quote says, our results show that fuel treatments generally performed as designed and substantially changed fire behavior and subsequent fire effects to forest vegetation. So this is the proof that forest treatments really do affect fire behavior and ultimately lead to more resilient forests. Next slide, please. Again, this is from the Emerald Fire treatment. This is from the Emerald Fire. I've shown this slide before. This is just showing, you can see on the left, that area on the far left is super scorched. That was not treated. And then when we get to the right, we see that area was treated, and you can see how the fire dropped down from the crowns. We have a lot more standing live trees left from areas that were treated. Next slide, please. So what are we talking about when we talk about slopes 30 to 50% within the basin? So within the Lake Tahoe Basin, approximately 61,000 acres or 27% of the total land fall on slopes 30 to 50%. The next statistic I think is really interesting. About 25,000 of those acres or 41% fall within the WUI defense and WUI threat zones. And I point this out particularly after the Caldor fire. Those are areas that we need to make sure that we are treating so that we are prepared for another fire if it should come into the basin. The last statistic just says that the majority of acres are on federal lands. I would like to point out, and I forgot to point this out earlier, treatments on 30 to 50% slopes are allowed outside of the basin. So under the current California Forest Practice Rules and Act, all over the state of California, they allow treatments on slopes above 30% with ground-based mechanical equipment. So this is not a new practice. This is regularly occurring on lands outside of the basin. Next slide, please. There is definitely an ecological and economic case and need to be made for these code amendments. So currently, code allows for hand treatment on slopes greater than 30%. Hand treatments, as many of you know, are resource intensive and often more costly. They lead to pile burning, right? Hand crews are not going to drag trees out to a landing to then be loaded on a truck to go to a mill. They are cut in place and pile burned. And pile burning is frequently less ecologically beneficial than the broadcast burning, where we have a slow fire that's creeping across the landscape under the trees. This also has huge implications for pace and scale of restoration, which again, after the Caldor fire, I think we all can agree we need to increase the pace and scale of restoration and forest treatments in order to reduce fire risk and ultimately increase forest resilience. Next slide, please. So we engaged scientists on this analysis. We brought in partners from the Pacific Southwest Research Station and the University of Idaho to assess the erosion effects of a variety of restoration treatments on hill slopes and soil types within the basin and within the Lake Tahoe West landscape. And those partners came to this committee in July 2021 to give a presentation on their initial findings. Next slide, please. I attached in the staff summary the draft WEP report. WEP is the Watershed Erosion Prediction Project model, and that's the model that they used to look at what erosion would look like through a variety of scenarios. And these are just some of the key findings that I think are really important and fascinating. Sediment and phosphorus yields from moderate or high severity fire were significantly more than all thinning scenarios under their modeling. Managers would need to apply thinning treatments more than 50 times within 60 years to generate the erosion that would eliminate any benefits of reducing wildfire severity from moderate to low, which if anyone knows about forest treatments, we would never thin 50 times within 60 years. That would be going back into every treatment once a year, which is unheard of. Next slide, please. Most sediment yield on slopes between 30 to 50% within the basin is actually coming from areas covered by shrubs and grasses and not from forested areas, which are the areas that we are targeting under this code change. And then lastly, on hill slopes between 30 and 50%, thinning will increase risk of erosion, but when thinned hill slopes erode, the sediment yield is no different when compared to untreated hill slopes. Next slide, please. So based on that analysis, that's when I started working on crafting some of the code amendments, and I engaged the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team. So I worked collaboratively with key members to come up with language that maintains the environmental protections while also allowing for the increased use of ground-based mechanical equipment on steeper slopes. Next slide, please. So the proposed code amendments really fall into two main categories. One is clarification and standardization, and the second one is expanded treatment opportunities. Next slide, please. So we'll dig into the clarification and standardization code amendments first. Next slide. So you'll see throughout that one of the main areas for standardization was the inclusion of overfrozen ground tree removal. So we previously in this committee, within the last 2 years, we've updated code language to allow for tree removal over snow and frozen ground. And so this was really just bringing this section of code up to into agreement with, you know, the previous code amendments that we've changed. So on the left, you can see the updated sections that have the inclusion of frozen ground. And then on the right, you see an example of what that looks like. We're allowing skidding over the snow as well as frozen ground. So I just went through and standardized across the board with that. Next slide, please. We also wanted to refine equipment definitions. So the old definitions were a little bit out of date. And so we just wanted to bring those up to reflect the suite of machinery and technology that's currently available for tree removal. So the big thing with this, if you look at the bottom part of D, you'll see ground-based vehicle systems. Originally, it just had our all-in-one process at stump. And while that's one technology that can be used, often it's a two-part system. So you have a machine that goes out and cuts, and then you have another machine that drags the tree and brings it to the landing. So we just wanted to bring it up to speed to reflect what's actually occurring on the ground. Next slide, please. So these are the code amendments I'm sure all of you are more interested in. These are the code amendments for expanded treatment. Next slide, please. So we refined table 61.1.6-1. This table talks about road type, design, and maximum grade. You will see that at the bottom, we took out tractor roads. A lot of our implementing partners felt that calling it a road was not accurate, that these are really trails. They're not going in building roads. They're not grading those areas. This is just the trail that essentially the tractor uses to get to the trees and the site, up in the site. You'll see that we changed the maximum grade for tractor and main skid trails and secondary skid trails to 50%, because you still will need to skid out trees from these treatments on 30 to 50%. Next slide, please. Refinement of table 61.1.6-3. So this is replacing TRPA water break spacing requirements that you see on the left with California Forest Practice Act water bar spacing requirements. So California Forest Practice Act allows for water, you know, as I mentioned, they allow for treatments over 50%. So the implementers felt that this was a good equivalent, and we're getting away from land capability districts, but when you look at the California Practice Act, they still take into consideration hazard rating, which includes the criteria that we use under land capability. So we're still encompassing all of the pieces. We're just allowing, we're using something that allows us to get up to that 50%. Next slide, please. So this refinement of table 61.16-4. So land capability districts 1A, 1C, and 2 are all areas over 30%. So the big change here is the section in red at the bottom, use of ground-based equipment and skidding may be used pursuant to 61.16F1 through 61.16F5 with approval by TRPA. And so if you go to those sections, which I'll highlight in a little bit, those are really where we say, this is how you can use ground-based mechanical equipment, this is how you can skid, and if you're gonna go to 30 to 50%, these are the requirements in terms of TRPA approval. Next slide, please. So language for skidding on 30 to 50% slopes. This would be the big piece, and essentially we say ground skidding on slopes between 30 to 50% still requires TRPA review and approval to ensure that environmental protection measures, and we list what those could be, but that's not an all-encompassing list. So water breaks, vegetative buffers, slope length limitations, remaining group cover post-treatment, and erodible soil avoidance will be in place to minimize slope erosion. So the implementer will still need to prove to TRPA that they can do these treatments without having slope, to minimize slope erosion. Next slide, please. And then similar language is in place for the use of ground-based mechanical equipment. So currently we allow ground-based mechanical equipment on slopes below 30%, and we are just bringing it up to speed for 30 to 50%. And so we say on slopes between 30 to 50%, ground-based vehicle systems for tree removal will require TRPA review and approval to ensure that environmental protective measures, again listing water breaks, vegetation buffers, slope length, et cetera, will be in place to minimize slope erosion. So again, the implementer needs to prove to TRPA before they get approval that they can minimize slope erosion to accomplish this work. Next slide, please. So I just want to hit home that I think for everyone, the Caldor Fire really highlighted the critical importance of forest treatments and defensible space work in the basin. The Forest Action Plan, which was released in 2019, looks at how do we collaboratively accelerate landscape restoration and community wildfire protection, focusing on the WUI and largely landscape restoration. TFFT partners are almost 100% on board with these code changes. And we do have an influx of funding for forest treatments and resilience. As you've all heard, TFFT recently received about $48 million of NIPLMA funding for implementation around the basin. The California Tahoe Conservancy has received another $35 to $40 million to do forest health and defensible space treatments. And so now is really the ripe time to get this type of work done and to focus on some of these harder areas that we haven't been able to treat till now. Next slide, please. So with that, I will open it up for committee comments or questions and discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. I'll ask for our committee member comments in just a minute, but I would like to make a few comments of my own, and I have a couple questions. First, the questions. Kat, On several places throughout the sections of the ordinance that we're amending, we talk about TRPA review and approval. So what is that process? Does that require formal TRPA governing board approval? How is that process? Well, who makes that decision?
Yeah. And Bruce Barr, our forester, is on the call, so he can help fill in the blanks. But I actually talked to him yesterday about this. So Bruce will get a project and he reviews and does the 5G findings. And then that will come to myself or to Kim for further review. And then once we've signed off on that, it goes to legal, and then from legal, and once they're in agreement, it will go up to Joanne for signature. And so, Bruce, do you have anything you want to add? Did I miss anything?
Well, that particular one addresses the Forest Service MOU that we have. For the standard MOUs for state lands, for the fire districts and whatnot, anything that doesn't require, that is inside their MOU relating to the size of the project, the number of trees, so on and so forth, they're exempt from review. In other words, if they're taking down a few trees on an urban lot, they don't require any review from us. But those aren't going to be 30 to 50% slopes. The Forest Service has a separate MOU, and that's one of the things that we've been discussing with staff, is that once CAT gets all of these code changes done, we can go back through and standardize all of the MOUs. And that's our hope. So as for right now, if you have a large, let's say, for an example, the project up on Spooner Summit a couple of years ago, that was a helicopter logging project. It was 300 acres. Their MOU only exempted them up to 100 acres. So that became a qualified exempt. Nevada Division of Forestry were the ones that were leading that project. So they submitted the project with the environmental checklist, the plan description, maps. We did a couple of site visits. And then I went through, did a 5G findings on it. I think Kim reviewed that project as well. And then it does not require Joanne's signature at that point for that specific MOU. The only ones that require Joanne's review and the legal review are the Forest Service projects, and they tend to be huge. I mean, we're talking thousands of acres. So they get a little different, and their MOU is set up different. But for projects that are larger, have specific issues, that's the process that we do. And then I typically just issue a standard tree removal permit at that point.
Bruce, while we've got you on the line, let me ask a follow-up question. On smaller projects, I mean, for example, for those of us who live in and around the lake and our communities do these different clearing projects or want to do them, how long does it take typically for a smaller project review to be done?
If it's on a small private parcel, Bud, you can submit a tree removal application to me, and I will be out there within a week, and you'll have your permit. If it's one of the larger projects that, say, North Lake Tahoe puts in some great projects, they're doing one now up on Diamond Peak for IBGID, that takes a site visit, a review. I can still get it turned around in under a couple of weeks. But for private landowners, small landowners that are, you know, if I can issue the permit on under 90, you know, 99 trees or less, I can issue those permits in days. So.
Good. Well, thank you. I have no further questions, but I did want to give a comment. Kat mentioned, I was on the Bi-State Fire Commission that reviewed the Angora fire, now 14 years ago. And so we got a little feedback from somebody, so if you turn off your thank you. So this particular recommendation number 17, took a lot of time and discussion at both at the subcommittee and at the full committee level. And there was a great interest in opening up the areas for this type of treatment. You know, the Bi-State Fire Committee was a commission a little different than TRPA. It was not focused just on environmental impacts, but it was also focused on the preservation of life, property, and safety. And so there was a very spirited discussion about this. And I would have to say that, you know, the members of the commission, we had a wide array of people there, but there was unanimous support for this particular recommendation from everybody, from the fire guys, from the general public people like myself, to the people that had environmental backgrounds and training who were on the commission. But there was a doubt at the time about the equipment that was available and what was available to do this kind of thinning and clearing on these steeper slopes. And that's what was the big question. And nobody could really respond to, we have the environmental groups there, and some of them were quite passionate about not taking heavy equipment onto the steeper slopes. And again, it was a question of the equipment that was available at the time. So you now see this language in our ordinances in a couple places about innovative equipment. Well, that's where that language came from, was everybody said, well, we saw that we need to have some relief in the future. We have to build something here to allow for innovative new equipment that is being developed and will be developed in the future. Well, fast forward now 14 years later, and we do have better equipment. And we've seen that in the stream environment zones. And now we're asked to do this on the steeper slopes of 30 to 50%. I'll have to tell you that I was an advocate for this recommendation 14 years ago, and I'm an advocate for these amendments today. And it'll be a tremendous relief on my part to see this passed ultimately, assuming we can get it passed. You know, there were a couple things that came out of Kat's presentation that I'd like to stress. You know, she indicated that there's 61,000 acres in the basin that would qualify for this treatment. Of those 61,000 acres, 25,000 plus acres, about 45% of them are in the WUI areas. And this gets to that question of protection of property and life and safety. So a high percentage of these acres that need to be treated are next to and in and among our homes, our businesses, our tourists, where our tourists go. And I can only tell you that it's time to pass this particular change. Further, I was really impressed when Kat mentioned the WEP report, which indicated that the managers would need to apply thinning treatments more than 50 times within 60 years to generate erosion that would eliminate the benefits of reducing wildfire severity from moderate to low. So, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, I think we've answered the environmental question, but I do welcome any comments or questions that anyone has, whether it's from committee members or from the public. So with that, I'll open it up. Other committee members, do you have comments?
I believe we had a queue there, but of us that wanted to have a question, if you can go into the chat.
Okay, let's see. Yes, well, Sue, please, why don't you go ahead and go?
Okay. Thank you, Bud. I appreciate the history behind all this, because I had my questions about how we landed there in the past. And that was a good little history lesson on Angora and what we've taken from that. And I really appreciate that. My concern is moving forward, are we expediting this properly so that we can do all that we can to get this as done as fast as we can, knowing that we have money out there right now? We have the threat of fires, obviously, is not going away. We have, and just as you were saying, but a lot of WUI areas, what 41% they were saying were out there that were, I think you said, under Forest Service, CAD, I believe. So there's a lot of issues here on how we move forward with all this money we have. We have the resources now, and I say let's get going on it. But, you know, are we going as fast as we can? It sounds like we still got this review and a lot of steps to make sure that we're doing it right. And I agree with that. We need to make sure we do it right. But at the same time, I want to make sure we're doing it as fast as we can so we can get moving and use this the resources we have. So I don't know if that was a question or a comment, Kat, but and I love your cat. Thank you.
Kat, can you give us any guidance on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few pieces. So, you know, TFFT is already, we had a huge meeting yesterday, about 3 hours, where we are already on the idea of how do we prioritize work and funding and build capacity with this influx of funding. So that is on all of the partners' minds right now about what do we need, how do we position ourselves appropriately to ramp up work. In terms of project review, I think, you know, based on what Bruce said, I feel fairly confident that we would, that the projects are still moving through quickly enough while maintaining environmental protection, if that makes sense. So I don't think that we, TRPA and our review process would be the holdup in terms of getting more work done on the ground. I really think that's really the capacity and making sure we have the workforce in place to handle a lot of this work as it comes in. And that's where TFFT is stepping in and is getting ready to figure out those next steps.
Thank you, Kat. I appreciate that. It was a really great report. Very, very thorough. Thank you.
Could I just add to Kat's? Good morning. This is John. If I could just add to Kat's answer, is that really why you're seeing this now, Sue, and not as part of the Lake Tahoe West process is because we want to expedite our part of that program. And our part is this code change. And so what we're doing is getting out in front of the other agencies in terms of how the land managers are, you know, processing their requirements for these large treatments so that we can have this code section available for their planning. Most of the projects that you'll see will be coming through with Forest Service. And that's where, you know, we really do have, I think, a pretty good system that has not led to any delays of projects, under the MOU or an amended MOU that we'll get to when we get all this work done.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, Jim, I see you have a comment. Would you like to address us?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a comment and then a question. First, I just want to, big thank you to you, Bud, for your leadership on this, and certainly all of the work of TRPA staff, in particular, Kat. I think this is a critical issue. We've been doing fuels treatment on the Nevada side for a number of years now. We've actually gotten to the point where, like, a lot of our urban lots have already been treated, but we still have a lot of work to do at Van Sickle State Park and up in the Spooner Backcountry. And the nature of Nevada up at the Tahoe Basin is we just have a lot of steep slopes. We have less land mass, but we have steeper slopes. And it's critical for us to get in and do some of this work. We have we use hand crews where we can, but it's very slow, and there's environmental impacts to trudging up conservation camp crews up and down the slopes and dragging stumps down. So this is really critically important. And then you did mention the WUI for Nevada. You know, that whole WUI is along Van Sickle State Park and up Kingsbury Grade, and those where we have steep slopes. And then get to the northern part of the lake and the interface between our state park and an incline village. So really appreciate the work on this. Like you, but I've been an advocate of looking at this for a long time as well. So, and I do, and I share your comments. I think the technology has changed. I think we have learned so much since, you know, this code prohibition was first put in. So certainly time to take a look at it. And I am comfortable that there's enough safeguards in place. Like other have commented, you know, there is a need to also, you know, get the work done and not hold things up. And I'm just curious, you know, I know, Kat, you mentioned that this is consistent with California forestry practices. I don't think, and this is also consistent with NDF, although there's not a lot of state land. Most of the land in the basin is Forest Service. So I guess my question is, does the Forest Service in their land plans or in their regulations, do they still need to make changes as well? Or Are we now all sort of on the same page?
Yeah, that's a great question. So typically Forest Service outside of the basin does, in their forest plans, they do have, they are allowed to go above 30%. The current forest plan does have prohibitions in terms of ground-based mechanical equipment, though I feel that the Forest Service is primed to, that hasn't, when we were working on planning out Lake Tahoe West, that wasn't an inhibiting factor. They were still planning to do ground-based mechanical treatments on 30 to 50%. We were looking at that. So I think that would need to be a minor change on their part. NDF does still, they have to get a variance from the state forester. So, but from what I, when I talked to Roland, he said that's not that difficult. They can usually do that pretty easily. So I think with us getting, having this, you know, it's one less step for them, and it becomes a tool that they can use, and it's a pretty easy process for them to go through the state forester.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Scott. And like I said, I do think this is critically important, and, you know, we just have to make sure that all of the agencies and land managers are on the same page, because we do have a huge influx of money coming in. And, you know, I can't speak for the California processes, but I know working with the Southern Nevada Public Land Management Act, there are constraints in how long that money can sit there. So we just have to be mindful of that. And again, thank you for all of your work and leadership on this.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Kat. Belinda, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. And thank you for calling on me. I also just want to add my thanks to the process that was involved in doing this. And clearly, all this work really resulted in, I think, just tragedy happening in Tahoe, the Tahoe Basin, due to the Caldor fire that, you know, we were prepared, you know, and better prepared than we would have been if some of these issues hadn't been addressed early on. And I guess the one question that I have is that I'm still not sure how much of this ordinance impacts designated wilderness areas. So if you could speak to that, and maybe the second part of the question is, are there any designated wilderness areas in the WUI? I just, you know, curious as to that.
Sorry, I have this actually, all this information in an email, so I'm going to look that up really quickly. So in terms of wilderness, about, I'd say 6,000 acres of wilderness between Desolation and Mount Rose Wilderness fall on 30 to 50% slopes. But the Forest Service has specific safeguards in place for wilderness, including that you cannot have mechanized equipment. So that would, and unless they change their wilderness policy, which I highly doubt the Forest Service is going to do, that does not, you know, that those 6,000 acres would not be slated for treatment. Also, a lot of those wilderness acres are actually exposed granite. So again, we aren't talking about treatments, ground-based mechanical treatments. Most likely what would happen in those areas would be prescribed burning. And then in terms of wilderness within the wildland urban interface, no, there are no wilderness areas in the wildland urban interface.
Great. Thanks, Kat.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I have no other panelists on the chat box, but do any of our members have any further comments? Any committee members? Julie, I see you're on our program. Yeah, you always have a comment.
I think John Friedrich has his hand up.
John, why don't you go, and then I'll jump in underneath John. Go right ahead.
Please. John?
By the way, Julie did a great job at the city council meeting last night, as an aside, as always. Great job, Cap, but also thanks for your leadership. And I would say anybody, you know, just take a tour around and see the 60 miles of dozer lines that were done on an emergency basis to prevent our town from burning down during the Caldor fire, to get an example of what happens when we don't do preventative thinning. And so I think, to me, combined with the new technology, that obviates concerns about the impacts, because they will certainly be far less than they will be when we're responding in an emergency fashion in the future. So I certainly heartily, I think it's the time is right to move forward with this, and more than willing to give my assent to this direction. So thanks.
Thank you. Julie?
Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Member Friedrich. I did just want to jump in again, Julie Reagan, acting director here at TRPA, for the benefit of our new members, which I want to also join Bud in welcoming to this committee, to Vince and Ashley. A little more background on some a few comments that Kat McIntyre made. The TFFT, as we affectionately call it, is the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. And as so many things happened in Lake Tahoe after Angora, CRPA was a founding member of forming this team, and it was really getting all the land management agencies, including the Forest Service, both states, the local fire districts, all the personnel from the chief to the line firemen involved in a collaborative approach looking at a 10-year fuel strategy. And the 10-year fuel strategy is the basis for all the work that we're doing now. So this work went on in 2008 and 2009 to get the team formed. And I just wanted the committee to remember how integral TRPA was to forming that. Kat's predecessor, Mike Vollmer, was on staff at TRPA at the time and really embedded as a true partner in the process of establishing this 10-year vision for cleaning up the forest. And then that has evolved over time into what we now call the Forest Action Plan. And that is now fully funded, which we've been working on for about 10 years. So the opportunity to really move through accelerating pace and scale is on our doorstep. And so to Member Novosel's question, we haven't been holding things up. We are now being proactive to say, let's get in front of this. Plans are underway. Kat McIntyre is now the new section planning chief for the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. So we have a chance to be proactively involved in the project development as it moves forward with this new influx of funding. So we're not going to be reactive. We're going to know going in, you know, working with the fire professionals where they see deploying the resources and when. So I just wanted to give a little context to that and to reassure the committee that we'll have the chance to work collaboratively as we go and not be in this, you know, reactive mode of, you know, reviewing permits after the fact. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Julie. You know, I just have to stress the importance of the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. And, you know, after the Angora fire, everybody, all the agencies had worked together before the fire, but the fire brought a focus, a new focus to the need to really work together and coordinate efforts. And I think that was one of the results was the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team formation. And the work they've done since then has been amazing. And I thank TRPA too, because there was a change of mindset at TRPA, at least from my perspective at the time, where they really got in and coordinated all of this among all of the agencies. So we can all be proud of that. If none of our other members have comments, then we have to turn this to public comment time. So I'll ask our staff to take over for that, and let's open it for public comment now. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we have a couple of comments. First is Eric Hornbett. You've been unmuted on our side. Please unmute yourself to address the committee.
Good morning, Forest Health and Wildfire Committee. My name is Eric Hornbett. I work as the Forest Fuels Coordinator at North Tahoe Fire Protection District. And I also serve as the project manager for the Tahoe Program Timberland Environmental Impact Report. I'm hoping this isn't the first time you've heard of the Tahoe PTIR, or the Program Timberland Environmental Impact Report. But I do want to report to you that Lake Valley, North Tahoe Fire, California Tahoe Conservancy, other members from the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team, under CEQA lead of CAL FIRE, did complete, finalize, and approve a programmatic timberland environmental impact report for state, local, and some federal lands within the wildland-urban interface on the California side of Lake Tahoe. So what does that mean? Head on, we wanted to go after program objectives of reducing the risk of catastrophic wildfire, increasing forest resilience to effects of climate change, drought, pest, disease outbreaks, protecting and restoring meadow and riparian ecosystems and forest habitat quality, developing and implementing all lands fuel reduction where we can connect these multiple divided local, private, and state landowners into larger forest treatments, while also looking at forest health improvement, restoration, and drive multiple community and ecosystem benefits, while effectively allowing us to increase our pace and scale of fuel reduction projects, and meeting the goals that we all know need to see happen in the Tahoe Basin. So we prepared the Tahoe PTIR to address a long-term program of forest management and fuel reduction within the Tahoe Basin on the California side. And part of this treatment, we included not only analysis, but also language that would support us utilizing, you know, appropriate mechanical treatments on slopes up to 30 and 50%, given that TRPA supports this code change. So I just wanted to relay that, you know, this decision and pressure from the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team and other agencies wasn't made in a vacuum. There's been a ton of code-driven analysis done between Lake Tahoe West and the PTIR during these development phases of these environmental impact reports and environmental studies. And we really do feel, given the low impact equipment that's available, whether it's rubber tracked or soft rubber tired, that we can design these treatments and do them effectively within the wildland urban interface and within forest treatments around the lake. For an example, I wish I could show you a picture, but we're actually currently analyzing one of our first all land fuel reduction treatments under the Tahoe PTIR, and it's in the Homewood Chamberlands area. It actually connects ownership, multiple private owners, California Tahoe Conservancy, Homewood Ski Resort, and Tahoe City Public Utility District into a comprehensive 300-acre wildland urban interface defense zone fuel reduction treatments. Because we have the PTIR that is allowing us to stay consistent with state, regional, and local regulation, we're able to come in, we're gonna be able to do a mix of commercial and non-commercial fuel reduction treatments, and about 15% of our ideal project area falls on slopes within 30 to 50%. You can imagine what the slope looks like when you have a lake, a band of community, and then moving up towards Homewood Ski Resort. You know, it gets steep for a reason. We like to ski there, and we also want to be able to provide forest health and community protection in this area. So just wanted to kind of wrap in the idea of where some of this ideas from the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team came from, how we've analyzed it, how it's been incorporated into some existing and new environmental impact reports within the Tahoe Basin, and how it flushes in with a near-term project that's currently being planned. To shed a little more light to that, when we plan a new project under the Tahoe PTIR, whether it's commercial or non-commercial, we go through a project consistency checklist. So we actually make sure the project that we're designing and planning on doing meets all the intents, standard project requirements, environmental regulations of the Tahoe PTIR. So we do a checklist. We prepare a programmatic timber harvest plan. That still goes out for multi-agency review through CAL FIRE, through TRPA, through those to get those permits. So we're still doing our due diligence at every project to make sure we're staying consistent with the environmental analysis that we have, and then also doing what's correct for the land. So just wanted to give the members of this committee just kind of a little more idea of what that would look like on the California side of the lake, especially once we, consider any sort of steep slope treatment. So thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Eric. I let you go on a little bit longer, but it was very informative. Thank you very much. Okay, Maria, please.
Next, Steve Teixeira. Go ahead, Steve.
Good morning. Thank you, Maria. Chairman Hicks, good morning. Members of the committee, Steve Teixeira. My company is Sustainable Community Advocates, and I have the honor of working and doing some assistance to support the local Tahoe Basin fire chiefs, and in that context, work with the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Committee. I want to thank Chairman Hicks for his accurate and eloquent description of some of the discussions that were part of the Angora Bi-State Fire Commission. I had the privilege of attending many of those meetings, and thank you, Mr. Hicks, for your great service there. And you were correct about how you described the evolution of recommendation number 17. And as we heard from the excellent presentation by Dr. McIntyre, this has been a long time in the work. I think we've come to the point where it's time to move forward, and just really wanted to urge the committee, as I think you will do this morning, to move this recommendation forward on through the process to RPIC and ultimately the governing board. So thank you all very much. And I'd also like to add my welcome to the new TRPA governing board members. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Maria?
Mr. Chair, we have no further public comment.
All right. If we have no further public comments, we'll close that matter. And at this point, we're ready for a motion on this particular item. The form of the motion is set forth on page 558 of our materials. Do we have a committee member that wishes to make the motion?
I'm happy to make a motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I would make a motion to recommend Regional Plan Implementation Committee and Governing Board approval of the proposed Code of Ordinance amendments as presented in Attachment A.
Thank you, Jim. Do any of our committee members have any comments or questions? And I would open this up to our other governing board meeting, other governing board members who are on this. Do any of you have any questions about this motion? Okay, if not, Maria, would you please do a roll call vote on this?
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Well, thank you. And I would like the record to reflect that my non-vote is in favor of this motion. Thank you. We are now on our third item of this morning's agenda, which is a public interest comments. If any member of the public wishes to address the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee on any item not on the agenda, please raise your hand now in webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria, do we have any persons who wish to make public interest comments at this time?
Mr. Chair, there is no public comment.
Okay, if no public comment, we'll close public comments. We are now on agenda item number 5, committee member comments. Do we have any comments from our members on anything of interest to the committee? Okay, I see no hands raised. We're at the time for adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The meeting is closed, and we thank you all for your participation. Thank you very much.